It's Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
All right, Monica, here's your warning. Bop, bow!
Okay, that was not much of a warning.
That was your warning.
My ears.
You asked me yesterday for a warning, so I gave you a warning that I was going to papow.
Mm-hmm.
She's Monica Lindstrom, KTAR legal expert, filling in today for Mac and Gatos along with myself.
Joe Huizenga, who
AKA
is a royal
Lloyd Banks.
Pain in the ear
really?
Drum right there.
A royal pain? Man.
I kid, I tease. You always kid and tease the ones you love.
It's a very awkward segue from
I guess it
to
is.
Talking about it. There's no easy way to segue to the Arizona woman who has been given the right to fertilize embryos to get pregnant without her ex's consent. Let's just dive right in.
All right. So
how the heck does all this happen?
So what happened was a woman and a man, they were dating. And at the time
we
were
don't need to go that far. We don't need to go that in
depth. It's part of the story.
OK.
So as they were dating, she ended up having cancer and had to go through chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
So they signed a contract to go ahead and harvest her embryos. He would fertilize them and they would keep them in storage in the event that she wanted to have babies down the road. They end up getting married. They end up getting divorced. She then wants to have the right to go ahead and use those fertilized embryos and have children. He doesn't want that to happen.
And a court ruled after this went down that the embryos had to be donated to a third party.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them.
Bad decision.
Well, but that was the decision that the court made.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell the court they're wrong, but you know what the court's going to do? They're going to ignore you, Monica.
Well, yeah, they'd ignore me. But so they ended up appealing that decision, and the Arizona Court of Appeals came out and said that, yes, she can use the fertilized embryos to get pregnant without his consent.
Now, hold the phone here. So not only can she get pregnant with those embryos, he doesn't have to give any consent.
Correct.
It goes further than that,
mm-hmm.
that should she seek spousal support.
Not spousal, but
I guess,
parental support.
same thing. We're in the 5 o'clock hour.
If you know what I'm going for,
it counts.
Uh-huh. Child support.
Yep. That's the one. You know, spousal support, child support. Sometimes, you know, if it turned out to be a boy, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 50 or two.
That's true.
We're all just big children.
That's true. Glad you said it.
Uh-huh. So if she sought child support, this guy who doesn't want any part of the process could still be on the hook.
Yeah, and the court acknowledged that that could be the issue. It didn't decide that issue. It was only there to decide whether she could use the fertilized embryos.
Hmm.
And it leaned heavily on the contract that the two parties made before they were even married. And the court said that the couple agreed to preserve the embryos to protect her fertility, not necessarily for them to have children together. So the court took a very fine line in this case. And the reality is this probably wouldn't happen now because state legislators took up this issue last year, and they now require that viable embryos from a divorced couple be awarded to the parent who will allow a child to be born. But the law also states that the other parent has no rights or obligations.
Mm-hmm.
However, the parties could always decide later, you know, if they wanted to change that.
And it's interesting because three judges ruled on all of this. And the one who ruled against the ruling that ended up taking place said something that I really find to be profound. She said, "Do contracts matter? I believe they do." What did she mean by "do contracts matter? I believe they do," specific to this case?
So the agreement that was signed by the two before they were married at a fertility clinic, it stated that in the case of divorce or separation, the embryos, quote, cannot be used to create a pregnancy without the express written consent of both parties, even if donor...
Are we talking chain dough now?
No, we're used to create the embryo. So in other words, the contract that they both signed that the court is leaning on and relying on says that the embryos can't be used unless there's express written consent by both of them.
So what are those other two judges thinking if they disagree with this one judge who says, do contracts matter? Because it sounds like they're saying, well, yeah, contracts matter, but not that part of it.
I think what they're doing is they're relying on what they believe the intent behind the contract was. So they're going behind the words. Yeah, they're interpreting it. At least that's what it sounds like. I can't crawl inside their head, but they did say...
Is that a judge's job?
Well, it's a judge's job to interpret laws,
yes,
typically, but it's not their job to put their judgment in place of another judge's or in place of a person.
Because that's what it seems to me like they're doing here. It seems to me like the one judge who ruled against this is saying, here's the contract. Here's what it says.
Now, let me ask you this. If the court had ruled that she could use the embryos to have children, because those are her those were her eggs.
Yeah.
But it also said that he was not obligated financially or in any other way unless he wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Would you be okay with the decision?
I would be, but... Here's the problem. I'm not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's now in this awkward spot where he signed an agreement that said, these are going to a third party if we don't both agree. And now they're trying to morph the terms of that agreement and say, okay, well, now she would get to use them and you're not on the hook for support. Is that good enough? It is for me, but I don't know how that guy feels because... Something he was a part of could come into this world,
mm-hmm,
and he could decide 5 years down the road, man, that stinks. This little person is 5 years old,
yeah,
and I don't have any part with them. So I can understand how he feels regardless. Like, he's kind of been deceived here. He signed something.
Right. And... Which, by the way, the contract didn't say that it goes to a third party. That was a judge that was ordering that. So
okay.
Their contract just said it could only they could only be used if they both agreed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Because in a way, I understand the third party thing, too, because it's somebody who neither you nor I know,
mm-hmm,
theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
So we would never know who that person grew up to be.
That would be horrible.
You say it would be horrible,
yeah,
but I also can make a case for out of sight, out of mind.
But my babies, my eggs, right, are being given to a third party, and
right,
I don't like that at all.
But
that's why I hated that lower court decision.
But I have an issue, too, with, okay, so now one partner just gets to decide? And they get to call the whole shots?
Well, you know, they both decided. She decided she wants them. He decided he doesn't want them. So I say absolve him of any responsibility or obligation and allow her to go forward. But I understand.
That's the easy way to settle it. That's the bare minimum that should happen.
That's literally splitting the baby.
That is the bare minimum,
you know,
that should happen.
Yeah.
Is that they should say, hey, you can go ahead and you can have the baby, but he is not on the hook.
Yeah.
But this court cannot rule over that, apparently.
Yeah, it didn't address that issue in that it didn't make a decision regarding that. Now, this can still be appealed to the Supreme Court of Arizona because this was just the Court of Appeals. So there is one more layer there. And the Supreme Court could decide that the lower court was right and give it to a third party or destroy the embryos.
We talked with KTAR News reporter Peter Seymour earlier in the show about the Phoenix field officer for ICE. He interviewed him yesterday, and we're going to let you hear what Peter had to tell us as far as how many migrants are currently in ICE custody here in the Valley, and what options do they have once they're released? That's next.
Drive home informed and entertained with Mac and Gatos, 2 to 6 p.m. on KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Drive home informed and entertained. Arizona's afternoon news with Mac and Gatos on KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
She's Monica Lindstrom. I'm Joe Huizenga. Earlier in the show, we sat down with KTAR News reporter Peter Seymour. And he had a sit-down interview yesterday with Phoenix field officer for ICE, Henry Lucero. And we talked with him about how many migrants are currently in ICE custody here in the Valley, what options do they have, and we asked him first what his biggest takeaway was from that half-hour sit-down that he had with the field director.
The migrants keep getting dropped off at these bus shelters, and Greyhound has said, don't bring them here, don't bring them here. Well, basically, the director, Henry Lucero, was telling me, we give them three options, these migrants. One, a bus station in hopes that they'll have a ticket. to go somewhere anywhere in the state or throughout the U.S. And, of course, Grand has said, if you don't have a ticket, you're not allowed inside the station or inside the building. The other is a shelter. Those are over capacity, and now the charities are saying, non-governmental organizations, NGOs, we can't take them either. We're out of room. We're out of resources, out of money. We can't do it. Or the third is they can just walk away. So once they open the gates at the detention centers, they're free to go. That really struck me as surprising because it's getting hotter outside. It's getting a lot warmer, and those are the three options. That's all they get from ICE at this point.
When you were speaking to Lucero, did he give any suggestions or possibilities as to how this process can be remedied or fixed or helped or anything at all? Did he have any suggestions?
The only suggestion he gave me was that Congress changed the law to allow longer detentions for these migrants. He looks at it this way. One, more time for his agents to process them, to weed out any criminals that might be among them. Although he is saying that, you know, our agents are doing a great job. We're catching the ones who have criminal histories in their home countries or criminal histories in this country if they're trying to get back into it. But then, of course, we don't have a crystal ball to know who is going to come into this country. They might have had clean lives, criminally speaking, up until now, but then they do something criminal here in the United States. But he also said that it could be a deterrent. So right now, 98% of migrants crossing the border after being processed at the Border Patrol, ICE detention centers, and so forth, once they're processed and they claim asylum, they've got a 98% chance, as he put it, to just come into the country and do whatever they want. They're on the honor system, basically. If they can come in and live cleanly, make their appearances in the courts for asylum, they could pretty much just stay here after a 20-day detention. He says if the detentions are stretched out, made longer, I guess a month or two, maybe more, but I don't think it can go any further than that, then maybe it would be a sign or a signal to the migrants in the Central American countries, okay, you're going to be in a holding cell for about, you know, 2 to 3 months when you first get to the United States. Do you really want to go at this point? My guess is that some migrants will still say, yeah, it's worth it. I can wait a little longer. That's fine. And then, of course, we have to ask the question, are there the resources, the money available to house these migrants even longer than the 20 days?
Yeah, you talked about processing. What did Lucero say about how long, if anything, about how long it takes to process one person? Are we talking a matter of minutes? Are we talking a couple days? How does that work?
It could be any one of those things. It just depends on how many migrants they get coming in. And the basically Arizona is receiving 300 a day crossing the border here.
Well, are we talking, you know, do they just ask them their name and look them up in the system and then they're done? Or is it, you know, longer than that?
It's a little bit longer than that because then they have to get a court appearance or scheduled. And of course, there's just the backlog. So it takes days just to get to that point of give me your name, give me your fingerprints. They just don't have the capacity, Lucero was saying, to work any faster than they have. And again, to try to screen them for anything in their past, it takes longer than that. I mean, when we go through criminal background checks, it takes longer than that. But they have a matter of 20 days. And if they don't get that, then it's they're free to go after that time. And basically, in that holding period time, they can make an asylum declaration, but then they have up to 1 year to do it. So they could take their time, these migrants, and still just be able to walk into the country, and maybe that changes their things. And then they get ankle monitors and
wait a minute, all of them that are released have ankle monitors?
That's what he was telling me, or at least one person per family. So if there's a family coming over, then one of them gets the mother or the father or one of the adults gets an ankle monitor. And of course, they could be cut if the migrant happens to be dishonest. Lucero didn't seem to say that all of them are. Some do keep them and some don't, just like, you know, regular people in this country. And then they're, you know, they're on the honor system. You know, they could have an asylum hearing in a year from now, hopefully less than that, in a court, and we see where we go from there.
Talking with KTAR News reporter Peter Seymour. She's Monica Lindstrom. I'm Joe Huizenga. Peter, you mentioned that the ICE director was an advocate for possibly holding migrants longer, and that, you know, if you go from 20 days to potentially 50 or 80, that he thinks that could make the system better. But if the system is already overwhelmed, how would holding migrants longer? I know he stressed it could be a deterrent, But if the system's overwhelmed, how would he take on that burden?
That's a good question. And I, you know, we always think of these questions after we leave the room and to follow up. But that's probably something for the next time we meet with him. I mean, that's he's only thinking of in terms of security. He's thinking in terms of, you know, OK, if I also have the detainees longer in these cells, then my agents can go and bust the criminals amongst the mm-hmm. migrants who are out of the detention systems instead of, you know, having them, you know, come to the offices to do processing.
Because how many are in custody now? We're not talking about like a couple dozen.
4,100.
Yeah.
Is the number he gave me.
Yeah, 4,100 migrants already in custody. So I'm just guessing if you push that number out an additional 30 days, it's not just going to be 4,100. It would be 8,000, 10,000?
It could grow for sure. And I asked him, are more immigration judges are on the way? And he said that's a question for the Department of Justice because they have to send the judges. So it's not just his agency. It's getting the other federal agencies to cooperate. And you know how slow the federal government moves.
And then one last one for me. You mentioned that the migrants are given three options by ICE, essentially just walk away on their own, go to a shelter or the Greyhound bus station. Did he have any sense for why they're picking the Greyhound bus station? Because obviously Greyhound doesn't simply let them inside there. They get dropped off there. And then if they, you know, get a ticket from a volunteer or somebody who shows up there to help them, they can continue on their journey to, you know, wherever it is they're going. Why are they picking the Greyhound bus station?
I think they're just picking transportation hubs in general because today, for example, the 150 migrants that came here, they were dropped off at a place near Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. The reason they're coming to Phoenix also from wherever they've been in Arizona is because of all the transportation options. That's how Lucero explained it to me. You know, maybe they can get an airline ticket, doubtful. Maybe they can get a bus ticket or somebody to, you know, donate for them, and then they can go on their way. Another stat that Lucero gave me, 95% of the migrants that have been coming since December, he says, don't stay in Arizona. They go to California, they can go to Texas, even the East Coast. They go wherever they might have some family, some friends, or job opportunities.
KTAR News reporter Peter Seymour, thank you so much, Peter.
Good to be with you both. Thank you.
And you heard from Peter right there. Another 150 migrants dropped off today at the Greyhound bus station. And afterwards, a statement came out from Greyhound.
Consistent with all Greyhound-owned locations, we allow access to our terminals to people who arrive with a ticket or who will be purchasing one. If a person does not purchase a ticket or have reservations to travel that day, our standard policy does not allow them to remain in our stations as our facilities have limited capacity.
So basically, Greyhound coming out and saying, if you didn't buy a ticket or if you don't plan on buying a ticket immediately, we don't want you here and you can't be here. So now the ball kind of gets put back in ICE's corner, like, hey, are you going to continue to bring migrants to the Greyhound station if Greyhound's saying, hey, we don't want you to do this if they don't already have a ticket or know that they plan on traveling somewhere? It's a total mess. When we come back, this was kicked around social media today. Who the heck knows why? Imagine you're stranded on an island. Who from the popular TV show Sesame Street would you want to be your companion? Don't look at me like that, Alonzo. I'm just reading what it says on the sheet. Hit the fancy stinger music thinger.
Drive home Thank informed you. And entertained with Mac and Gatos, KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Drive home informed and entertained. Mac and Gatos, KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
The New York Times bestseller, Sisters-in-Law, comes to the Phoenix Theater Company on April 3rd through 28th. What are you laughing about, Pablo? You want to go see Sisters-in-Law? Just head to the rewards page at KTAR.com for your chance to win tickets. Sounds like a rip-roaring good time. All right, so making the rounds on social media is this whole debate about if you were stranded on an island, which character from Sesame Street would you want to be with? And I take huge issue with your selection, you big cheater.
I'm not a cheater. I said that I would take the Count
because
he's
why?
A vampire.
Yeah.
Vampires can turn into vampire bats.
Uh-huh.
And in all the movies and like Hotel Transylvania, uh-huh. the vampire bat could pick me up and carry
right.
me to safety.
Yeah, the little tiny bat is going to pick you up and carry you to safety.
Yes, the vampire bat, just like Hotel Transylvania.
All right, I'm going with either A, Big Bird, because I will teach Big Bird to fly, even though I don't believe Big Bird knew how to fly. But I figure we're going to have time to kill.
He's a flightless bird.
Well, Big Bird is going to summons the courage to fly, though.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Also, you could give me Oscar the Grouch. He's endless entertainment, and he will make all of my days better.
Okay.
You give me Snuffleupagus. I got to believe he was a big creature. He probably could swim real well.
I doubt it. He'd probably sink.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm just going to get on his back and just, we're going to swim to freedom.
Well, my second choice would be Sully, because he's like the handyman or the construction guy.
What is Sully?
Because then he can turn around and, you know, make me a fort or something and shelter. This is a great, serious conversation. This is very important.
You could give me any of the characters from Sesame Street and I would just be having a great time. I wish I could go back and just watch Sesame Street all day, every day. It was just endless entertainment. But whoever thought of, hey, if I was stuck on an island
with a character from
Sesame Street.
They have too much time on their hands.
Way too much time.
Uh-huh. Way too much time.
The story that I saw today that I most wanted to talk about is this cow that got loose in New York.
These are live pictures now from Chopper 4. We were over the northbound side of the Major Deegan Expressway here by West 166th
sure.
Street. For those of you familiar with the area, this is just a little bit north of Yankee Stadium.
No.
You can see that somehow a cow wound up on the northbound or in the northbound lanes.
A cow,
Cops
Becky
responded
Lynn.
Quickly to the scene. The animal's down on the ground.
On the ground.
Obviously distressed. You can tell by the way the animal
distressed
is breathing.
Cow.
When we first arrived down on the scene about 10 minutes or so ago, that cow was kind of just laying there, seemed to be calm, and then all
of
a sudden something.
He was calm, distressed. He's on the
something
ground.
Something set him off,
the
and then he started jumping.
Where's the cow going to be if he's not on the
something
ground?
Something set the cow off. What do you think set the cow off? Maybe, I don't know.
Cars?
It's loose on the highway?
Is this the cow that was going to Chick-fil-A?
No.
You didn't.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you know? I thought this was this video. There's a video of a cow, and it's crossing the road, and there's a Chick-fil-A right
over
there.
No.
Okay,
this
that's
cow
funny.
Was loose in New York.
That's funny.
All right. Chad Benson is coming up next. Check him out at just after 6 o'clock. Taylor Kinnerup's going to have a check of the news for you for Alonzo Montalvo, Pablo Rios, Becky Lynn. She's Monica Lindstrom. I'm Joe Huizenga. And Mac and Gatos will be back in some form tomorrow.